Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Dan Seip. Additionally, I'm the branch manager here at Serving Those Serve and Lee Seip & Associates. I will start as I always do. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and most importantly, thank you for your service to your country, to me, to everybody. You simply do not hear that enough. We are back once again with EZ, affectionately known as Ed Zerndorfer, or as we call him here, the Guru, as part of our ongoing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. Now, I always have to do this at the beginning of every one, even though Ed is awesome and everybody should listen. I have to say the opinions of Ed Zerndorfer, even though they are awesome, are not necessarily the opinions of Raymond James or Serving Those Who Serve. And this podcast is presented for information only and not intended to be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. So on today's show, we have a twofer. Ed has two really, really great articles, and we're going to work through both of them. Once again, they are in the FedZone at scwserve.com. Click blog, and you will find it in there. So, Ed, pretty much everybody in the DMV now knows that you're a great teacher and author on the topic of federal benefits, but unless they spend time reading your bio, they may not know that you are also an enrolled agent with the IRS, and as such, have a tax practice. So today, we're going to be in that wheelhouse, mirroring your FedZone articles. And the first one is on year-end tax moves. Now, I know that there are people just waiting to listen, but there are some that might get to it after the holidays. So some of these tips will also apply for 2020, correct?
Absolutely correct, Dan.
Okay, great. So let's jump right in with your tips. Number one, you suggest taking one's federal withholding. I know from our practice, we had a couple of people get a little bit surprised that they didn't get the refund they thought they were going to get or that type of thing. So why don't you touch on that?
Yes, Dan. In general, in my tax practice, I advise clients to check their withholding not in December, but throughout the year, especially okay. In the middle of the year when things are, you know, settled down a little bit after tax season. And this time of year in December, it's getting a little bit too late to adjust one's withholding. Mm-hmm. However, that being said, I would suggest that employees, because there's still probably at least one more pay date left in December, and what I'm getting to is the fact that the contributing to the traditional TSB would be a way of still saving on federal taxes for 2019, that they check their withholding for this year. And the best way to go about doing this is that the IRS updated its W-4 calculated for 2019, they did it probably in, I think it was September, October. Mm-hmm. I've looked at it. I've used it. It's a little more user-friendly. But they should go onto the website at www.irs.gov, have their leave and earnings statement with them, any other income they may have received during 2019 so far, and input their income and any deductions, itemized deductions or standard deduction, to see where they stand tax-wise this year. Because if they owe a lot of money, let's say a couple thousand dollars,
sure,
and they still have an opportunity to contribute to the TSB, they have not maximized their TSB contributions for 2019, namely 19,000 maximum regular contributions plus 6,000 catch-up, they should really think about putting some more money into the traditional TSB, mm-hmm, because that will reduce their tax liability. According to their, how much will reduce? Well, it depends what tax bracket they're in. If they're in a 22% federal tax bracket, 22%, if they put $1,000 into a traditional TSB, that will save them $220 of federal income tax.
Sure.
And the same thing is true with the states, Maryland, D.C., Virginia. Take Maryland, where I live. There's an 8% tax. They put $1,000 in to the traditional TSB. That will save them $80 worth of Maryland income tax.
Sure. And you said number two, to take a look at itemizing or taking the standard deduction. Why do that now?
Well, under the current tax law, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which is in effect now and will be in effect through 2025, Congress took away some of the itemized deductions, namely, they limited some of the itemized deductions. Probably the biggest limit they put was on state and local income taxes and real estate taxes, where an individual, whether they file as single or married filing jointly, is limited to $10,000. Mortgage interest is still around. Miscellaneous itemized deductions is not around. Mm-hmm. Charitable contributions are. But Congress, at the same time, doubled the standard deduction for individuals. So some people may be better off taking the standard deduction versus the itemizing. And if a person is single, they get a standard deduction of $12,200 for 2019. Mm-hmm. So let's take that individual. Let's suppose they paid the full amount of federal, of state and local taxes, real estate taxes, and limited to $10,000. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't itemize, even if they don't have a house and own a mortgage, if they own a mortgage, if they contribute more than $2,200 to charity, they're going to be above the standard deduction of $12,200.
Gotcha.
Trust me, there's no lack of charities that would love to have their money.
Oh, okay? Yes, they will.
And as long as they do that before December 31st, they're going to be able to include it as an itemized deduction. It doesn't have to be cash. Here's another example where they could get a deduction. Suppose they have an appreciated stock or bond or mutual fund. They could donate that fund, contribute that fund to the charity. The charity would sell it, not pay any taxes, and the individual donated will get a charitable deduction equal to the fair market of the donation. So that could really bump up their charitable contributions to the point that when they add up all their state and local taxes and charitable contributions to be above the standard deduction.
Sure.
But it has... These contributions have to be made this month before January 1st.
Gotcha. Now, speaking on behalf of the advisory community, if you hear this and it sounds good to you, on behalf of my brother and sister advisors, please don't call them on December 31st saying, I want to move these mutual funds to my charity, because they're going to come hunting Ed and I. Give them a little bit of lead time. Okay, so up next, and this kind of dovetails into this, you said it's not a bad time for folks to take a look at their investment portfolio and evaluate capital gains. Why don't you walk folks through that? I know what that means, but let's talk to the folks out there.
Okay, so this has been a good year, Dan, for the stock market.
Indeed.
Okay, stocks have gone up. Stock mutual funds have gone up. People are very happy, and they maybe think about, well, if it's gone up, if I sell it, I'll make a gain. But there's something in the back of my mind. I have to pay tax to IRS and to my state if I have a gain. Well, the good news is, yes, you will, but if you've owned a capital asset, such as a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, an ETF, and you've held it for at least 1 year, and you sell it for a gain, you'll pay what's called capital gains tax of 15%, most cases, on the net profit, 15%. Now, it's called a preferential tax rate as opposed to what's called an ordinary tax rate. An ordinary tax that you're paying on your interest income, on your salary income, on your pension income. If you are in a 22% federal marginal tax bracket and you have these capital gains, you'll pay 15% tax on the capital gains. Even if you're in a 24%, if you're in a 33% tax bracket for marginal tax, you'll pay 15%. So it's called a preferential tax. So You're getting a little bit of a tax break. The states don't work that way, but the federal government does. So you're paying less of a tax. They have a capital gain.
Sure.
At the same time, Dan, if you have investments that have gone down in value, okay, there's no hope for them to come back. They've lost value. They're not going to come back. If you sell those investments at a loss, you can apply those capital losses to any capital gains. Suppose you don't have any capital gains. Then up to $3,000 of capital losses can be applied against other income, and any excess above that can be carried over to 2020 to be used in 2020.
In our practice, we saw that with the December pullback. You know, there were people that had the opportunity to, as we say in the industry, harvest the tax loss.
And one word of caution, Dan, about that. This is what I advise my clients: if you have capital losses, you sell an asset you know is not worth much, and you're tempted to buy it back. at a low prices. Oh, you can, but you're going to have to wait for at least 30 days after the sale to buy it back.
Gotcha.
Because if you buy it back within either the 30 days before you sell it or after you sell it, then the IRS is going to disallow it. It's called a wash sale. So beware of that, okay, about that, because the investment companies know that.
Gotcha. Okay, number four. I know this one's a big one for you because you've talked pretty animated about it, which is beware of cryptocurrency. So why don't you give a few thoughts on that?
Well, starting earlier this year, the IRS has been cracking down on cryptocurrency. It's one of their main projects now, okay? I'm well aware of the policy, and I'm warning my clients that if they any dealings in cryptocurrency, I'm not going to prepare their taxes because I'm not prepared to calculate the capital gains and losses. It's
okay, listeners out there, if Ed Zirndorfer is walking away from it.
There are some people who do that, and it's not going to be cheap, who prepare taxes. But all I want to say now is that if anybody has deal in cryptocurrency, please, you're going to have to report the information on your tax return because the IRS is going full force to make sure that people who deal in cryptocurrency are in full compliance with the tax laws when it comes to this.
Okay, good tip. Number five, actually, Ed, this is an all year round point for me. Contribute to TSP because it really surprised us. We were speaking to Andrews Air Force Base, and we'd done some research to prepare for it and supporting a TSP presentation over there. And 31% of feds are not contributing up to the match. So feds, if you're listening to this in your office or you're on the metro with other feds, look to the left, look to the right. There's a chance one of you is leaving money on the table, but I'll turn it over to Ed because we're talking year-end stuff now.
Well, I can't agree more with you, Dan. As I said a few moments ago, at a minimum, just for the tax reasons, to save on taxes, sure. Okay? But almost as important, you're looking at your retirement. The only time you can contribute to the TSP is when you're a federal employee.
Yep.
One of the things I show them during my seminars is a chart showing, I call it the retirement tripod. And part of the tripod is contributing to the TSP, to an IRA, to savings/investments. And I asked the participants, if you only had $1 that you could afford to invest, where should that dollar go? And everybody says, probably TSP. I says, you're right. And can you give me two reasons? And they say, not sure. It has the lowest cost. Well, I'm not so sure. There may be some even lower. I can't guarantee it. But this is what I will tell you. There are two reasons. There are two unique things about the TSP. One, you only can contribute to it when you're a federal employee.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say you're in the military. When you leave federal service, you leave the military, you cannot contribute to the TSP.
Very true.
Okay. Can you contribute to an IRA when you leave federal service? Sure. All you need is some earned income, you or a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can always put money into savings and investments. The other reason that the TSP should be your highest priority is because you're getting matching.
Absolutely.
If you're a FERS employee, and most people are now, that for the first, if you put in a minimum 5% each pay date, you're getting a maximum match of 4%. You always get a 1% of gross pay contribution. I tell my young employees, I know you have bills. I know you have daycare. I know you got a mortgage. I know you're paying student loans.
Get that free money.
I know you have student loans you're paying back, but you have to put in at least 5% each pay date. Otherwise, you're leaving money on the table.
Absolutely. Okay, so number six, make 529 contributions if you haven't already done so.
The 529 plans, Dan, are these plans in which you put money in with after-tax dollars, and they grow tax-free, provided when you put money out, it's used for qualified college expenses, such as tuition and fees, expenses for college like computers, things like that.
Sure.
Each state has its own plan. And you're free to go to any state. But if you, in certain states like Maryland, I know that if you contribute to the Maryland plan, Maryland gives you a tax deduction.
Very true.
There is no federal deduction here. Actually, the only benefit on the federal side is that when you pull the money out, the earnings will not be taxed, provided it's used for college expenses.
Yep.
But what Maryland says is that if you put in, I think, $2,500 to the plan, you get a deduction for that. So at 8% tax in Maryland, you're going to save $200 of taxes. So this can be, and it's not only for parents for their kids. A grandparent can put it on for the benefit of their kid. It's not just the parents. And you're saving for your child's college education at the same time. It's very important.
No, it's great. It's a great deal. Okay, number seven, most folks don't know about this. And you say to beware of the so-called kiddie tax. Why don't you touch on that?
Well, I've been around doing taxes now for like 35 years. And I remember when the kiddie tax came out in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And what the kiddie tax says is that if a parent turns over money to a child, okay, and the child now is in the child's name, mm-hmm. and the money is getting interest, dividends, capital gains, things like that. It's in the child's name. The idea is that since the child's in a low tax bracket, the child will pay hardly any, if any, taxes on their investment income. Well, Congress caught a hold of that and said, "Listen, if the investment income goes over a certain amount, and this year it's $1,100, okay, then anything above $1,100." Will be taxed. The first $1,100 is tax free. The next $1,100 will be taxed at the child's rate, but anything above $2,200 will be taxed at the parent's rate. It's called the kiddie tax. They changed the law in which the amount above the limit, $2,200, used to be taxed at the parent's rate. Now it's taxed at trust tax rates. Trust. Ouch. And trust tax rates, Dan, are very, very severely high.
Yep.
They really can hurt you. So it made it very, very hard to transfer money in that sense. I can tell you, I remember when the kiddie tax first came out, it only applied to kids under the age of 14.
Mm-hmm.
Then they raised it to 17. Now it's up to age 24. So gotcha. if you have a child in college,
sure,
you're shifting money there so the child can pay. That's not a good idea. Also, one other last thing, that for those parents who have kids and they're shifting money over in their name,
mm-hmm.
when the parent applies for financial aid, the money in the child's name is going to hurt the child's chances for financial aid, more so if the money were in the parent's name.
We have discovered that as well. Okay, so number eight, make sure you get your required minimum distributions in if you're over that magic age.
Okay, so anybody who's over the age of 70 and a half who owns a traditional IRA, who owns a 401k plan, a 403b plan, the TSP, okay, is required to take a required minimum distribution starting the year they're 70 and a half and every year thereafter. Now, there are some exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
One exception is if you're working for a company in which you're contributing to a 401k plan or you're working for the federal government and you have the TSP, you are not required to take your RMD from that plan until you retire.
Mm-hmm.
However, that does not apply to a traditional IRA. Even if you're working past 70 and a half and you have a traditional IRA, you must take an RMD from that traditional IRA every year. Many people tend to forget about that, especially if they're working.
Yep.
I just want to point out that the IRS has a penalty if you don't take your RMD. And that RMD penalty is 50. That's 50% of whatever you didn't take out. Ouch. Okay.
Big ouch.
And I'm running into several clients now who say, I'm not aware of that. Well, mm-hmm. The IRS does not have any sympathy.
Nope. Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
So when you hit 70, I advise individuals, go to a tax advisor.
Absolutely.
Life gets complex.
Nine is my favorite because it involves charity. We touched on a little bit before, considered making donations, mm-hmm. you know, before year end. But also consider qualified charitable donations, QCDs. Why don't you walk us through that?
Okay. About a couple of years ago, Congress made this law permanent. Take an individual who's over age 70 and a half, who has to take RMD from an IRA. Congress passed a law that said that if that individual makes a donation to a charity, a qualified charity, that donation will count towards their RMD for the IRA. Okay? So let's do an example. Suppose an individual has an RMD from their IRA. Let's use an amount, $2,500.
Okay.
Their church, synagogue, mosque has mm-hmm. dues of $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll write a check from the IRA to the church, synagogue, mosque for the $2,500. They have fulfilled their RMD. Now, people say, well, wait a minute now. I thought that RMDs, okay, you got to take the money out. It counts as income. Now comes the beauty of the QCD.
Mm-hmm.
The money you take out, you give it directly to the charity will not count as income. Okay. You mm-hmm. will not get a deduction, however. You can't right. count as a deduction. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Okay. But it will not count towards, it will not be included in your income. This is good for two reasons if you are over 70 and a half. One, it will not count as part of your adjusted gross income, meaning that if you're paying for Medicare Part B and Part D, it will not maybe bump you into a higher income tier mm-hmm. because it's not included in income. And two, it fulfills your RMD without having to pay tax. You're not paying any tax. When you take the money out of the RMD, you take your RMD, you got to pay federal and state tax. You fulfilled it. You don't have to pay tax. So these RMDs, these QCDs are very good.
Sure.
But I want to emphasize, it has to come out from an IRA. Those individuals who have TSB over 70 and a half retired cannot make a QCD from their TSB. What they can do, though, is if they transfer their TSB account, their traditional TSB account, to a traditional IRA, to the whole thing, at that point, they can start doing QCDs and not have to worry about RMDs
gotcha.
From the TSB because it's no longer in the TSB. I'm not saying to do that, but sure. That's a way around it.
And you know, while we're on the topic of charity and given that we're year end and the seasons that accompany year end, I'm just going to throw this out there because it's one of the most remarkable things I've encountered probably in the last 10 years. We were actually at a service, and this particular church was talking about a fundraiser that they were doing where, and I don't know if you've encountered this, Ed, but it as soon as I heard it, it was the closest thing I've encountered to a magic trick where they are raising money to be able to help forgive medical debt. Because as I'm sure you're aware, that's one of the biggest causes of bankruptcy in the United States. And many times it is sold. It is sold on a secondary market mm-hmm. and sometimes sold multiple times.
Yes.
And by virtue of that, charities are popping up that are buying the medical debt and forgiving it. I turned to my wife and I said, I would have lived another 100 years and I would have never thought of that. But as soon as I heard it, I knew it would work. I'm just popping that out there, folks. That is not advice, not telling you what to do. But there's just some amazing work being done out there by some super organizations. And if you're inclined to look around a little bit, that particular one will be easy to find. If you just Google charity forgive medical debt, you'll find the places. It was just a very cool thing, and I knew it was coming up to this podcast and wanted to share. So Ed, keep that tax hat on, because we're going to go to your second article, which would be some important considerations when converting traditional IRA to Roth IRA. So let's go ahead and steam ahead with that. So you indicate that doing this means you pay tax now versus later, but you cite some reasons why that makes sense. And let's begin there, because as you mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, we still have a few years left before the tax cut would sunset. So why don't you take us through your thoughts?
Yes, Dan, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 lowered individual tax rates temporarily. Because what's going to happen is, on January 1st, 2026, tax rates will revert back to what they were in 2017, inflation adjusted. So what I am telling my clients is the fact that between now and 2026 is a good opportunity to take advantage of the low rates.
Mm-hmm.
And the question comes up, what do you mean take advantage of the low rates? And here's what it comes down to. The question I get is, Ed, what is better for me? My traditional TSB or my Roth TSB?
Mm-hmm.
What should I contribute to? It comes down to a very simple fact. If you expect to be in a higher overall tax bracket when you withdraw your TSB
mm-hmm.
compared to your tax bracket when you contribute to, then it's best off that you have Roth to your name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're going to be in a higher tax bracket when you time you take the money out versus when you contribute to it. If you expect to be in a lower tax bracket by the time you withdraw your TSB account versus when your tax bracket when you contribute, you're best off with a traditional TSB.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody invariably says, oh, I'm going to be in a lower tax bracket by the time I retire.
Mm-hmm.
I am mm-hmm. not so sure about that.
I agree with
okay?
you.
Okay. I want to give you an example. I have a couple clients who are federal employees who have over $1 million in their TSB accounts.
Uh-huh.
And they're so happy. They're so happy. And they should be. They're very proud. But I say to them, I ask them, how much money do you have? They say, oh, I have about $1 million. Okay. Well, you realize it's not $1 million because after the taxes, they're probably down to probably $600,000.
Sure.
Okay. But I also tell them that when you turn 70 and a half, you got to start taking that money out.
Mm-hmm.
So given the rules for RMDs, at age 70, if you had $1 million or more in your TSB account, you would have to take out five-digit RMD. That's it could be, in some cases, $20,000, $30,000.
Sure.
And here you are, retired from federal service. You're getting a sizable annuity.
Yep.
CS Rest refers. You're taking Social Security.
Yep.
Put it all together. It is conceivable that you're going to have more income in retirement than you will, than you had when you were just first retired. And that could push you into a higher tax bracket.
Sure.
So it's a good chance that you're going to be paying more in taxes. Also, you got to remember, you may be taking this money out after January 1st, 2026. Remember, the tax rates are going back up.
They don't even have to vote on it. It's just going to happen.
It's on the books, Dan. The Congress voted that, okay? So that being said, let's take advantage of the low rates now. Pay the tax now at the lower rate compared to the rate you would pay had you taken the money. When you take the money, had you not converted to the Roth IRA or transfer your traditional TSB to a Roth IRA, at the time you're going to take the money out down the line.
Sure. And you also mentioned that the Roth will not have required minimum distributions once you've made the conversion.
Well, we're talking about the Roth IRA, Dan.
Correct.
Talking about the Roth IRA.
Yes.
The Roth IRA is the only type of retirement account that is not subject to required minimum distributions.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep your Roth IRA, you don't have to take RMD. Of course, if you take it out, you want to pay taxes. So the question is, what happens when I die?
Mm.
Well, you have a beneficiary for your Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
If it's your spouse can transfer it into his or her IRA, Roth IRA, and leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're not subject to required minimum distributions.
That's right.
Okay. How about non-spousal beneficiaries, like children? Mm-hmm. Yes, they are subject to RMD when it comes to inheriting your Roth IRA. However, they're not going to pay tax.
That's correct.
Say hello to a tax-free inheritance. That's what I say.
Yep. It's a great inheritance vehicle. Now, you also touch on that people need to put a lot of thought into how much they convert and when to do it.
Yes. As you know, Dan, we have the federal tax brackets. Yeah, there's a certain amount of income in which your tax bracket will stop. For example, I'm just off the top of my head. I think that this year in 2019, for somebody who files married filing jointly, the 24% federal tax bracket ends at $321,000, if I'm not mistaken. $321,000, that's taxable income.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a client, and they contacted me, and they said, listen, we really would, I'm retired. And I have a lot of money in my TSP. I'm turning 70 this month, and I know I got to take an RMD next year. Is there anything I can do to transfer? I mean, anything I can do to minimize that RMD in 2020? I said, well, how much taxable income do you have this year? Oh, about $245,000. So we got roughly about $80,000 that we could transfer to a Roth IRA and still be below the $325,000, and that will keep you in the 24% bracket. You can't go over that.
Gotcha.
It also pay tax at a rate of maybe 33%. So they said, that's wonderful. But then the client said to me, oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm taking Medicare Part B. I'm in the fourth tier. So back to the drawing board.
Gotcha.
We went down to about 40,000. Because if he took out more than 40,000, it'll push him into a next tier for Medicare Part B premiums. That'll be in effect in 2 years. So I'm looking at that to make sure that they don't have to pay more for Medicare Part B.
And I think that also brings the point home that folks, don't try this at home. You know, Ed, you advised in your article, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, talk to your tax advisor, get some guidance on this before you try and take a bite out of it.
As I say, converting traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs, transferring traditional TSB to Roth IRAs should not be done without a qualified tax advisor okay, who really understands all the rules.
Sure, because you round out with a pretty useful table in your article where it's talking about the fact that you could end up with a surtax if you go over certain amounts and you have investment income and things like that, correct?
Yeah, we have these, I call them the stealth taxes, okay? Called the net investment income tax, the NIT tax, I call it, NIT, okay? And the thing is that if somebody files as married filing jointly and they have over $250,000 of adjusted gross income and they have interest, dividends, capital gains, that are outside of a retirement account, just regular interest, dividends, capital gains, they're going to pay tax on those gains at the rates they are taxed at, plus an additional 3.8% on top of that.
Ouch.
Okay? Like the example I was talking about earlier about somebody sells a stock or a mutual fund that's going up in value. Let's say they have a $3,000 capital gain. Yes, they're going to pay 15%. Capital gains tax on the 3,000 plus another 3.8% on the capital gains. That's 18.8%.
Yeah.
But that only applies for people who over a certain adjusted gross income level, married 250, single 200,000, married filing separately 125,000. So that's another factor that goes into this calculation.
Sure.
You don't want to transfer so much or convert so much that it may push you into that net investment income tax threshold.
Indeed, nobody wants a surtax. And a final word of caution going forward, you can't undo these things if you do them wrong.
Yes, one of the things that happened with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 is Congress changed the rules. It used to be that when you converted a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, you had to pay the tax, but let's suppose down the line, you say, "Oh, I don't have the tax. I don't have the money to pay the tax."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that was a bad idea. You would be allowed to undo the conversion.
Right.
It's called a recharacterization. Okay, Congress got rid of that. They said now you can't undo it. Once you do it, that's it. What Congress didn't do, and we'll be talking about this next month, we talk about IRAs.
Yep.
That if somebody made a contribution to a Roth IRA for 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And found out, I was not eligible because my income was too high. You can recharacterize that. That they didn't change.
Okay. Well, that's at least
a plus.
And
we'll be talking about that next month.
Good. I have one thing, folks, that I'd like to close with today. I try and keep my rants to a minimum. Mostly the team here hears them. My wonderful bride hears them from time to time. But some things pop up that I just feel the need to talk about because, you know, if it's unfair to you, somebody needs to speak up. And we'll be covering this throughout the year because there's an improvement coming to the iFund and TSP. And in my opinion, it's overdue. But to be fair, it really kind of does require an act of Congress to make an improvement to the TSP. So with that type of legislative element, these things are going to happen. So basically what's going to happen in the high level is your iFund is going to change. So it includes pretty much the whole world minus the U.S. And again, I won't get into the weeds on this. So that's the whole world minus us. So a truly international fund. Well, you just never know what's going to pop up when things become politicized. And Senators Rubio and Shaheen authored a bill to block that. Now, this is a clear improvement for feds, and it brings the TSP in line with the top 401k plans in the nation. And it is a good thing, but they are objecting to it because the whole rest of the world includes China. I will say that again. They're objecting to it because the whole rest of the world includes China. Now, I am old enough to remember a few decades ago where we were involved in a trade dispute with Japan. And if you take the time, as I have done, to look back through trade disputes, we've had a lot with a whole lot of people that we're now friends with and that sort of thing. So I'm sure their heart's in the right place, but I don't believe that bill was well-reasoned. Well, it may not move forward. Here's what got me. This past week, Senators Rubio and Scott from Florida wrote a letter to the president asking him to replace the TSP board at the end of their term for going ahead with this change. So I will say that again. They fully fulfilled their fiduciary obligation to you. They did their job well. And the request is that they would be removed. Now, the math in this is beyond the pale. I'm not going to pick any fights over that because there's really nothing to fight about. Because when you do the math, as they explain it in their letter, the only way that works is if every single Fed suddenly woke up and changed all their money to the I fund, which I don't see that happening. But most importantly, the TSP and its board was never meant to be politicized. If you go back to the act that created it, it was done so that it would be separate from this type of thing. That's why the independent board was created in the first place. Number two, I'll say it again, including emerging markets, which includes China, makes for better diversification for the career Fed and brings the TSP in line with the other top 401k plans. We have the best government workforce in the world. You should have the best benefits. Number three, this one just got me, because in their letter, they refer to taxpayer dollars being used to support the Chinese government. These dollars are from your hard-earned wages, career feds. It's your money. And as part of your earned retirement benefits, again, we have the best government workforce in the world. You deserve the best benefits. If you get a moment, please read the Thrift Board Chairman Michael Kennedy's reply in the November 25th government executive. It's beautifully written. Mr. Kennedy, I applaud you. I applaud your full-throated defense of the dedicated men and women of the federal workforce. And again, I know best intentions were probably in play here. So to the good senators, I'm sure your hearts may have been in the right place on this. So I'm going to offer a simple suggestion. Instead of falling prey to jingoism at the expense of the career feds, how about if we focus then on constitutional mandates like passing a budget? Let's work on that first before you take a swing at the feds. Sorry, folks, that was one I just had to let go. Okay, rant is over. The TSP was not created for political gamesmanship, shouldn't be used now. So thanks for sitting through that with me, Ed. Great stuff from you, as always, on point. And you've done it again. You gave feds a really good framework of knowledge to help make the best decisions. You know, since this is year end, I will wish you happy holidays.
Likewise, Dan.
And you'll be back with me after the first of the year. We'll keep this going.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm Dan. He's Ed. I'm an advisor. He's the Fed. We're here for you. We'll be back in the new year. We are Serving Those Who Serve. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on the YouTube channel and remember to share it with your friends and strangers. And I mean that seriously, because I see the numbers going up. We have regular listeners now. And if you can think of one of your Fed friends, text them the link. If each one will reach one, we'll be able to help a whole lot more feds. Right, Ed?
Absolutely.
Check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn. Don't forget our seminars every month around the DMV featuring Easy, the guru, Ed Zerndorfer. Ed Live is an experience you do not want to miss. For more information, go to stwserve.com. Click seminars and events. Be sure to read Ed every month in the FedZone. Also at blog.stwserve.com. So for Ed, the crew at Serving Those Who Serve, and me, Dan Sipe, good luck. Godspeed, and remember, it's your Fed life. Make it a great one, because you deserve it. We are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving Those Who Serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Sipe and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary. Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of the quoted professionals or their respective organizations. Neither Raymond James Financial Services nor any Raymond James financial advisor renders advice on tax issues. These matters should be discussed with the appropriate professional. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected, including diversification and asset allocation.